Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. You're listening to a previously recorded show, Foundations of Estate Planning. I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, saw you at the coffee shop the other day.
Yes, you did.
And, but I had to leave before you were going to buy me a coffee?
I was. You were standing right there.
Right, and I came back a little bit later, and it hadn't been paid for, though.
Oh, did they? I didn't leave. They didn't get my note.
Didn't get your note.
I don't understand.
Well, hey, we're talking about taking care of people, taking care of yourself as it applies to your trust planning. And foundational questions that need to be answered when you have a trust that you're setting up, hopefully with Paul's services. And you want to review a little bit where we've been on this subject, Paul?
Yeah, this whole series has been about foundations. In other words, if you come into my office, what are the foundational questions that I'm going to be asking you? And then I've tried to also take a little bit of a deeper spin in that and say, well, why am I asking this question? To give you greater insight to the power of the question and really what it is trying to accomplish for you. Because there's different tools that anyone can use. But the most basic tool that we use, one is called a will. One is called a trust. And we're talking about developing a trust, and a trust that is more rich, deeper with questions than a simple templated trust. Many documents that I review, I can tell when they are more straightforward templated documents. You may have gotten them off the internet. Maybe you used an attorney that is not as experienced or detailed in creating estate plans. And so they use templated starting points, and unfortunately, those templated documents typically do not work as what the client desires or envisions. And it is my philosophy, it's my standard practice, that we need to ask deeper questions and follow-up questions, the questions that answer multiple layers. In other words, my philosophy is, if I can get you to answer questions that deal with the worst case scenarios and the contingencies of what if this happens, then the plan will certainly function when everything goes well. So my job, I believe, is to ask the deep questions and make sure that the worst case scenario will still accomplish the client's goal. And when we use a trust, then there's a couple different times that we really have to look at. And our previous shows here in this series have really concentrated on the questions that I ask in order to take care of the client themselves, because my first job is to take care of my client. Then, when someone passes away, then I can turn my attention towards closing the estate, and I can turn my attention towards the beneficiaries, but not until someone passes away. So we've answered all the questions of how do we take care of you during our lifetime? But now, unfortunately, in our story, like everybody knows, there's two things that we got to deal with, which is taxes and death. And so they seem to be the absolutes in life. Yeah. So that's our story here as we take over and continue this program of foundations, what to expect if you walk into the office, what questions am I going to ask you, and really the core of why am I asking them. So that's where we're at right now is, now the story has changed. I've taken care of the client, and now, unfortunately, the client passes away.
Yeah, that's what's been interesting to me about this series is how much the trust does take care of you in your life.
Right.
Toward the end of your life, who knows? But sometimes people linger for a long time, and they need lots of things taken care of, and the trust can help with that. Okay, so the person now has finally passed away, and now what happens, and how is this compared to a traditional will and the whole probate process? You get to avoid all that with a trust.
Well, you can. As a matter of fact, that is the intent, or maybe one of people's desires is that a trust would avoid the probate process. Unfortunately, in my experience, when I have clients come off the streets and they were not a part of my detailed process. Unfortunately, a trust oftentimes does not avoid the probate process. And there are multiple reasons why. We'll get into a few of them. But let's start with talking about what is the probate process. So why would someone even want to avoid it? And what's the big deal about probate? As a matter of fact, in Washington, I've heard many attorneys say that probate is not that big of a deal in Washington. So most people can utilize a will instrument, and it's really not a problem. And while I almost understand that philosophy, and to be honest, I kind of don't. I think what they're looking at, or the lens they're looking at, is that in Washington state, we do not have a probate fee. So places like New York, Florida, California, and Michigan, where I'm actually licensed, those probate systems have a value that you have to pay to the probate court based upon the value of your estate. So if you have a $4 million estate, then there is going to be a blank number fee that you have to pay to the probate court. We don't have anything like that in Washington. So all we pay is the standard fee to start a lawsuit. So every probate is a lawsuit. You have to start with addressing the court and putting in initial paperwork. And it's no different than if you were in a car accident and had to sue someone. The terminology might be just slightly different, but in essence, you take paperwork to the court and you pay the flat court fee, the flat rate court fee, and now your paperwork is presented to the court. That's the only fee that the court system has in Washington. And so based upon that, I think maybe the fallacy in some other people's thinking is that, well, we don't have additional costs like other states impose upon a probate. So therefore, the probate system is not a big deal. In addition, Washington state has a probate system to where we can, in essence, tell the court we don't need your help. And if we do, we'll come back to you. So it's called non-intervention. We don't want the court to intervene on the affairs of closing the estate. So there's only a few things that we would actually want to present to the court. We would want to present that we did a full accounting of the estate, that we'd want to present to the court what was in the estate. We have to start by presenting the actual will. And so, again, for these reasons, the thought process is because the court is not going to actually take up the case and manage the case and actually have their hands on the case through the entirety and tell us what to do with it, again, that's called non-intervention, then there is a perception that that is an easier process. Well, number one, I believe I know what I'm doing in closing a probated estate, and it would take me a minimum of 6 months to close any probated estate. So therefore, we always have a timeline of how fast I can close a probated estate. That might be similar depending on the circumstance in a trust, that we may want to have a breathing time to let creditors come out of the woodwork, for lack of better terminology. So there may be some similarity there, but it's not always the case with a trust. So in a probated estate, really what's happening is there is some asset that is titled in the decedent's name. And in order to get the personal representative, or other people call them the executor of the estate, so we need someone empowered over that asset of the decedent because, well, when someone passes away, they can't sign over, for example, their house. As a matter of fact, that's one of the more common things that needs to go through a probate is a home, because most people don't use a beneficiary deed. We do have that in Washington. And they don't have their children on the deed. That's a good thing, not to put your children on the deed. And so therefore, if I was single and I pass away, I am unable to sign my name any longer to transfer that deed in a sale. So therefore, we need to open up a probate so that someone else is empowered by law to sign my name after I've passed away. Now, when I pass away, all power of attorneys, we talked about those in our previous segments. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and find all of our previous podcasts. So a financial power of attorney ends at the moment someone passes away, because that is a lifetime document. It is a document where I am saying, I empower you to act as me. But as soon as I've passed away, I can no longer act. So therefore, the power of attorney ends immediately. So we can't use a financial power of attorney anymore if someone passes away. So therefore, how do we get someone else empowered to sign a decedent's name? We have to go through the probate process, or we have to have another way for that asset to be properly titled and the authority over that asset to be given to somebody else. Well, that's why we use trusts, because a trust doesn't die when the creator dies. So therefore, a successor trustee can immediately come in, have the legal authority over that asset, and by the terms of the contract, also known as a trust, we get to be able to have power and authority to sign on behalf of the trust immediately. So the trust doesn't die versus someone who owns property has died. Those are two very different systems. If someone passes away with assets titled in their name and there's not a beneficiary on that asset, sometimes bank accounts, other financial accounts such as IRAs, investment accounts, annuities, they may have a beneficiary designation. Well, that's actually a contract that you have with a financial institution. And so the financial institution is going to follow the terms of their contract and not need to go to a probate court in order to move those assets. Why? Because we have a contract again. So things that are not jointly owned or don't have that TOD, those need to potentially go through a probate process so that we can get someone legally empowered to sign a decedent's name. That's what probate is doing as a foundational premise, is that we are empowering the personal representative or the executor so that we can move assets out of the decedent's name and give it to those who are beneficiaries in the way that the will has told us to give it. In addition, we also need to then make sure that debts are cleared out of that process. That's the other thing that a probate system would do, is it ensures or gives the opportunity for anyone who had a debt against the decedent, a credit card, a medical bill, just a loan that was either secured or unsecured. There's a way for a creditor to come to the estate and say, that person owed me money. So it is so that we can move assets to the beneficiaries, and it is so that we can ensure that the creditors are also paid properly. So that's what a probate is doing, and it is a different system than a trust, because a trust just doesn't die, compared to if I died owning property, then I have to have a way to legally move that property to the beneficiaries.
Okay, some of the foundational questions, issues you need to consider in creating a trust or even a will. And we'll continue with this discussion in just a moment. People are intrigued by your approach, Paul. They want to find out more about your services. How do they do that?
Yeah, I mentioned head over to our website at legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts. All the series here that we've been talking about are found there. Also, there's ways to communicate with us and upcoming educational opportunities, and it can all be found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. You're listening to a previously recorded show, Foundations of Estate Planning. I hope you enjoy it.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, and Paul is talking about foundational issues and questions regarding trusts versus wills, and again, explain a little bit more about the difference between the probate process, how that closes the estate, and how a trust closes the estate.
Yeah, so when we talk about closing an estate, it means that someone has passed away, and we need to remove all assets out of their name, make sure that their name is off all bills, whether it's a utility bill, close credit cards, pay last hospital bills. In other words, we need to clear everything from that person's name. And so how is that done differently inside of a trust versus inside of a will slash probate process? In some ways, they do look similar. So when we deal with creditors, for example, so in every trust, there is a power given to a trustee to settle accounts, to settle debts. Well, the reason that that language is in there is for this specific issue, which is someone's passed away and we have to clear out all of these last bills, all these last invoices. So in the probate process versus the trust process, there may be very little difference in how we're going to actually approach creditors or pull them out of the woodwork and cut off their rights. So in Washington, there is a there's one of two systems you can use when you think about how do I get creditors to come forward and clear that out of an estate. One way is that you can use a publishing system. You can publish notice in a newspaper in the county that someone's resided in. I've heard of some attorneys even putting that notice into multiple counties if they're not exactly sure where the decedent spent a primary part of their life. Let's say that they had some health issues and we moved mom or dad to a care facility that was in Snohomish County, but their primary residence was actually in King County. Well, in that scenario, it might actually be confusing of which one was their primary residence at their passing. Was it where they were being cared for? Depends on how long they were there. Or was it still their home where they had lived most of their life? So there may be a good reason to go ahead and publish in multiple counties. But really what that publication is doing is we are trying to give notice to the entire world that says this person passed away, and if you believe you have any claim against them whatsoever, then it's time to come forward. I've heard of stories where someone was in a car accident and then months later passed away. Well, guess what? They caused injury. It was their fault in that car accident, but no lawsuit was ever started against them. So guess what we're going to do? We're going to publish notice and we're going to try to force that person that if you have a claim, then you are now on a strict time clock by statute, by what the law says in Washington to bring forth that claim. Otherwise,
well, how long can that time go?
Yeah, it's 4 months. So if you publish, you've got 4 months to bring a claim. Now, the beauty of that is that if someone does not bring forward a claim, the law is pretty clear that that is the end of the ballgame. Okay? It's very strict in its interpretation on saying if you've done this, if you've followed these rules. And I would encourage you to make sure that you have an attorney that will help guide you through how to do that properly if you are facing any type of a probate or even with a trust. We may want to take this road depending on the financial circumstances surrounding the one who passed away. But now we have put everybody on a very strict timeline. And they have 4 months to come forward. Otherwise, they are forever barred. They are forever unable to bring forward a claim against the decedent again. Now, there's a second way that you can do this, which is to do nothing. And the law says that if you do nothing, in other words, you do not take the proactive way of publishing a notice, then any creditor has 2 years,
2 years
to come and bring a claim against you. So for most individuals, we want to use that four-month process. And it works whether it is a probate and it works whether it is a trust. And so, like I said, there is a similarity between those two processes that we need to move forward with. And that's why I said I can never close a probate unless faster than 6 months, because it takes a time to get things to the court. We got to publish this notice, and then we got to make final distributions. That's what I want to say to right. the beneficiaries.
Yeah, get the beneficiaries. When am I going to get my money?
Absolutely.
Those calls a lot.
And yet in the background, what we're doing is we're trying to protect the beneficiaries, because if we distributed money without the notice, then we have a creditor come.
Quick, I need some of that money back.
A year. That's exactly it. Yeah, that's right. And that is exactly what would happen. But guess what's happened to that money in the hands of the beneficiary? Oh, it's gone. So therefore, they don't have the money any longer because they spent it. They got a nice new car in the driveway, right. But how are we going to take that and pay the creditor? So it opens up a large can of pickles that if you don't do it right and you start distributing money, or if your assets are all on beneficiary TODs, so your IRAs have your kids as a beneficiary, your accounts do, and even your house. Guess who's paying those bills? Is that there is a process for creditors then to sue the children and demand that money is given back to them. So is that where you want to be? Do you want creditors to have an open door to being able to sue the family to say, I want you to contribute back to this bill? So while we think that using beneficiary designations, using a will, trying to get our house with a transfer on death deed makes it a non-probate system, that may be accurate, but your family may land in probate depending on what creditors you have at the end of your life. And you may be thinking, oh, well, but you know, it's just a credit card. But I don't know whether you got ill and all of a sudden you have a $100,000 hospital bill and whether they're going to start coming after your kids or whether you caused an accident just before you passed away, and like the one story I just told. So I don't know what I don't know when you die. Taking today's circumstance and making future presumptions is not good estate planning. So need to be careful when you use a will system, when you use a system that does not retain some assets within the estate to ensure that the estate can be solvent and actually pay everything. Because if not, then they're going after your family to get paid. And that just created a whole mess. And here everyone thinks, okay, this was an easy probate system. I don't know what Paul is talking about, until all of a sudden it's not. And that's my argument against the thought process out there that says probate is no big deal in Washington. Well, I don't know what I don't know about you passing away. And so I would rather have a more secure system than trusting the probate system or not trusting the probate system or arranging that everything goes around it in order to accomplish some type of easiness versus having a really secure plan that anticipates the worst case scenario again. Because remember, at the top of the program, I talked about that how my philosophy is I have to prepare an estate. I have to prepare that if the worst case scenario happened, that the plan that I've developed still is upheld and still accomplishes the purposes and objectives that the client had. I'm not so sure that I can always do that through a will mechanism. I'm not sure that just simply doing a probate runaround is the answer, because again, I just don't know what the future holds. I don't know the scenario by which someone has passed away. I hope that we all pass away peacefully in our sleep. Fantastic. And all our credit cards are paid off. And we have no one chasing us for creditors. And the kids can have the money and they can go spend it on whatever they want. Okay, if that's your vision. I hope that it's easy. But because I don't know it is, I need an instrument that is going to be prepared for the worst case scenario. But when it's good, then it's able to be fluidly distributed and it all works flawlessly. That's what I want out of an estate. That's what my objective is in helping clients with their estate, not just getting them a document, not just making presumptions. We got to ask better questions.
And he will ask you those questions when you come in and try and set up a will or trust with him. But obviously, Paul leans toward trusts. He thinks it's a better instrument and in protecting you in your life and after you've passed away. People are intrigued by your approach to this subject. They want to find out more about your services. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Yeah, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's ways to communicate with us. There's upcoming educational opportunities, even all of our past podcasts. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, it's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.